Welcome to Declarations of War Podcast. This is episode 74. Your hosts for this evening are myself, Alexei Card, the one and only Ninja Turtle.
Hello.
Ali Aras.
Hey, guys.
CSM Elect. Very nice. And our special guest, Towers V2 of the Goonswarm Federation.
Hi.
And random forum vagrant, Painus Myasis, that is actually his name, who does industry in high sec and
hey,
is not
on?
A Spurg.
Yeah.
So, first off, some shout-outs. I want to thank everyone who received a Collector's Edition Goblin Didn't Want This Poco Anyway Poco, as well as Varg Altol from the brand new EveEvents.com. It's a good place to put your meetup or your corp event if you're doing like a public fleet or something. It's pretty much the go-to spot for all that kind of stuff, and he's been very nice in putting the relaunch of Nor Academy on that calendar, which we'll talk about in a bit.
I'd like to give a shout out to everyone who voted for me and who sent me back for another year of CSM. Very excited about that, as well as everyone I met at FanFest, including Turtle. I had an awesome, albeit unfortunately short, weekend and have recently recovered. And I think successfully missed the FanFest death flu.
Yeah, that was fun. That was fun hanging out, though. It was definitely cool to meet you and a lot of other people, actually, that were kind of fans of the show. So that's, I guess that's kind of my shout-out, too, is I went over there with a bunch of Black Legion guys, basically. One of them's a good friend of mine in real life. So, like, all those guys, all the friends we accumulated on the way, just random people. I met some dude that I met at the Alliance tournament 6 years ago. Met him, like, one day. We just completely randomly met 6 years later, like... this trip was so much work, but it would have really honestly sucked without all those people just to be able to hang out and party with on the off time. So, thanks everybody for coming.
Powers?
I'd like to thank the lovely diplomats, of course, Diplomatique, and all of my minions and mini-love.
Painus?
Well, being here with Alvarez has just inspired me with love for Goon Swarm, the only goon that I have known for a little while now, Bony Tooth, and I would just like to say that I am so in love with you. And my love grows more and more every day, like 13 inches and growing. So let's make out.
Oh my. And as always, an opening shout out to our very fine sponsor, Eve Time Code. Buy 14 EVE time codes, get one free. EVETimeCode.com, where your business counts. Speaking of, Turtle, did you run into Diana at FanFest?
I did not, no.
I mean, did.
I might have seen her and just not recognized her, but I didn't actually run into her.
Allie, tell us your Diana stories, because there usually is one.
She told me to say hi to you, for one thing. Mostly just she showed up at the Not a Charity dinner immediately after the CCP Partners dinner / booze event. And then we hung out in the basement of Tapas for a while. And
the basement at Tapas.
I mean, the sort of like back room area. It's pretty basement like back there.
Hello.
I was eating. She had already eaten, and just hanging out, swapping stories about fan fests. And I mentioned I was on Declarations of War, and she told me all about, you know, having met you and hanging out with you and all that. And then eventually lost her. Actually, I think she was possibly with the group that I got horrifically lost trying to find Harlem. CCP had made us lying maps.
Gotcha.
But that I that's as wild as I think I can make that story. But on the other hand, it's one of those things where FanFest is several dim memories strung together.
Right.
Yeah. I got some crazy fucking stories, but I'm not putting them on a recording.
What happens in Reykjavik stays in Reykjavik. All right, getting into it. So, usually when we have someone from Goonfleet on, it's Minna, usually because that's something to do with the CSN.
But mine is our token goon too, to be fair. So
Minna, Mina, whatever.
Whatever.
He's also the token finance guy that hangs out in our diplomat chat, and he does stuff with Mini Love. He helped me run the Poco Defense on HiSec that I did for like 5 months.
But you were in charge of it though, right?
Yeah, that was I was in charge of it. I basically every day when there would be Pocos up, I would form them up to dudes to go get it taken care of. I would make sure that there were free ships for people to fly. Because if you've ever seen us try and defend Pocos, there's always the one guy that doesn't follow my instructions and will either get himself suspect, so I have to bring in an orca and have him refit the warp core stabs and warp out before he dies, or he'll just concord himself on something and it's really awesome.
So, how did you feel being beaten by Gevlin Goblin?
Dude, I don't care. That thing was so fun. Like, I spent 5 months. We made, like, a lot of money. I'm not really going to disclose how much. And I got to see him increasingly spend more money week after week and talk about how we were losing and how we were breaking. And then one day I was just like, hey, I have all these Pocos. Hey, RVB, do you guys want some extra Pocos? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, all right, here you go.
Yes, conveniently, just as Nora got reestablished for another week. No, of course. I mean, no, you don't have to explain yourself, Powers. Not at all. I get you.
He paid you in advance, so it doesn't matter.
Run away!
No, it's just like we knew that we had a Burn Gita date on the horizon, and we wanted to get... You don't know how much time and effort it is coordinating the logistics for building all the modules and getting them all moved and making sure everybody's not rusty, you know, going out and doing some ganks for like freighter stuff and going to see if we could find any new gimmicks, which we did. We developed a few gimmicks.
Well, I want to talk about not only the gimmicks, but I'm hoping because you're here and because it's information you would know, if you could, when we get to that part in the Eve News segment, talk a little bit about the back end side of what goes into making an event like that happen.
It's a lot of work, a lot of delegation, a lot of people just spending a lot of time helping out. It's pretty fun.
For right now, though, like, how did you first get into Eve? What was your first day like?
I first got into Eve because I was posting on the firing range subforum on Something Awful, which is where people go to talk about, read about, like learn about guns and stuff like that. And I've posted there for a few years. And I saw a forum banner, which they run ads on SA that, you know, most people don't turn the ad blocker on for because they're generally funny. Like people, it's forum users that will buy ads that link to a thread or link to a product that are generally for people on the forum, something funny. So I saw something scrolling through and it was right around the time of, I'd say it was after all the Wall Street crap, but it had a guy with glasses and it says, are you slightly sociopathic? And then it would roll through and I was like, what the fuck is this? And then it just kept getting, the ad kept getting funnier. And then I was like, all right, I'm clicking on that. And I got to the Ether and I was like, man, this is a lot of stuff. So I did a trial from the link that they have. And I immediately got a bunch of skill books in my Velador that did tell me what I need. So I got all the way down to Sock, and I jumped into one smeb and I hit a bubble on the far thing and I died to some dude. And then I was like, well, fuck this. So I got free rifters and whatever station we were staging out of in Delft. That was back in 2011 at the end of the year when we were trying to do Freeport Delft. And then I just would get drunk and fly rifters, and I lost about 18 rifters that month. And I immediately subbed, and then we went to war against White Noise, and the rest is history.
It's not a bad rifter ratio. 18 in a month.
Yeah,
I mean, I got battleship kills, battlecruiser kills in that rifter. You know, I would drink, and some girl from FA taught me how to fly a rifter. And to this day, we're still buddies, and she just got married to another dude who recently joined FA. You may know Quark UK from the Hatchery.
It sounds super familiar, but I'm not sure from where.
He's one of those solo PvP dudes that's really good. Anyway.
So what's your favorite chip now? I assume you've graduated from the Rifter.
Yeah. I really like the Vagabond, but that's not my favorite chip. My favorite chip right now is the Naglfar, because I'm trying to do some gimmick with it, and I need somebody else to help me. But I figured out that you can alpha a ray with like two or three of them if you do it just right. And I'm trying to get a Jump Raider alpha in Losec. I'll eventually pull it off.
Huh. Oh, that'll be interesting to try.
Yep.
So how did you rise up the ranks, Goonswarm? When I first talked to you on Twitter, I don't think you were that big of a deal.
Yeah, so I've always been like social, you know, media kind of guy. And Twitter is just, it comes naturally. But I scammed around a bunch the first 2 months and got enough to buy myself a combat character, because that's the real thing that you do in Goonswarm, is that you figure out a way to get money fast and then avoid having to wait for skill points and shit, because that's boring as hell. So I got a combat guy, and I could all of a sudden fly all of these new ships, so I proceeded to lose a bunch of ships and read the forums a bunch and read the wiki a bunch. And basically learned as much as I could about, like, EVE politics and history and stuff like that. And after a few months of just taking in everything I could read about, like, Russian politics and various things, which Russian politics is really hard to understand in EVE. And they had a diplomat drive, and I immediately applied to be a diplomat. And that was back when Vileorat was still around. And I was one of about four dudes that got picked, and there's only three of us from that Diplo class that are still around. We're now the senior Diplos. And I basically worked with allies, and then I started being more social and talking with hostile entities or neutral entities, and just constantly talking to people about what's going on and how they're doing, and just building contacts until, you know, I just kept doing that. And the first Bird and Jita rolled around, and myself and another guy were trying to separately get mission ganking and, you know, minor ganking, like a crew, a special interest group inside of Goonswarm, going. And when Burn Jita happened, the Mutani finally was like, all right, yeah, you guys can do that. And that was Warakini. And him and I both would do mini love stuff. Well, he was in charge of it, and I was constantly doing stuff. And then the Mutani made both him and I in charge of it. Then they tried to make me a director of Minilove, and I said, no, I'll make Warakini. And then they came back around and directed me eventually when he got really busy. And Warakini and I are the two guys. I don't know if you remember, but back in August of 2012, we started doing battlecruiser ganks of freighters, and really prolific in the fact that we were doing like six or seven a day with just Taylor's and stuff. And then that turned into a whole crazy gimmick that we did for a good, year and a half, 2 years, and we still do it occasionally.
Well, now you've mostly switched over to Catalyst.
Catalyst work. We still like to do it with like six Taylor's and a 0.5. It's still hilarious when six dudes come out of nowhere and blow somebody up. People are all of a sudden confused, and some guy on Twitter will do a danger zone report that somebody's ganking freighters here, and watch out, like that's going to matter.
How are you liking or not liking the mining barge changes that are coming up in the summer for your work?
I don't want to go on a wine session or anything. The meta certainly changed. People are more encouraged to fly a Procure or a Skiff because a lot of the people that we go after are static ice miners, right? Various other mining barges are good for yield, but for the people that we generally hit, they don't care about that. So when we'll roll through a system, you'll see everybody switch to Procures and Skiffs all of a sudden. So the days of old where we could do mining interdictions, that's gone. You have to have a bunch of people working together all the time, which we're constantly working together, but we're doing it so our scouts can always find somebody else, and there's always two or three guys on cooldown and there's always two or three guys that are ready to gank. So we could sit there and just chain ganks for, you know, like 2 hours and rack up a stack of like 30 dead dudes. But when you start to hit ice fields full of procures and skiffs, where people, they have faster base speeds and they can just hit orbit and go AFK for however long it takes for them to fill their ore hold, it's, you know, it kind of sucks. But we have materials, and those materials bump those guys out of range, and
can't you just, we'll get ours. Couldn't you just apply the catalyst process to that as well? I mean, if tracking's the problem, why not use smaller ships?
Because most of the ice fields you see will be in a 0.7 or higher, so you have to get a bunch of dudes, and you'll have like 20 dudes waiting on a timer just to kill a 30 mil barge.
Yeah, I getcha.
The idea is to keep people having fun, so while the guys are waiting out their 15 minutes, there's somebody else going, and they're constantly posting kill mails, and it's funny. We also encourage people to solo gank, where we have a bunch of dudes that will sit around in pipes, and they'll take a Vexer with guards and rails. They'll sit on a gate, and when a T1 hauler will decloak, they'll just kill it. And they've been getting like 500 mil to 2 bill kill mails just from solo industrials rolling through.
Autopilot.
And if they do it right, they can loot the stuff, and bam, they flex that account.
Very cool.
So a lot of people are paying their subs just from ganking, and we teach people how to gank, and it's just something that where our freighter ganks have paid for all kinds of free ships for ganking, and if somebody wants a Vexer or a Catalyst or a Thrasher to go kill stuff, we give them ships for free, and we've been doing that since we started.
So your suicide ganking program is essentially self-sustaining, and it's not really fueled by your zero-zero income.
Yeah, like, there was a long period of time where we didn't gank freighters because we were focusing on more variety, and so we would do mission ganks and minor ganks, and all of that freighter ganking stuff would pay for it. Like, we don't take money from the Alliance. We don't have to, because we did it with like 2 bill startup on our initial set of freighter ganks, and those ended up paying for everything. Then it just sort of steamrolled into a crazy self-sufficient nutty thing. Figured out how we could do, you know, hostile logistics ganks, and that just went like during the Fountain War, we were ganking test freighters and jump freighters, and that's pretty funny.
So the idea about putting rigs on freighters and jump freighters, is that does that curl your stomach, or is that just another thing, or what are your thoughts on that?
Kind of. Like I said, I didn't want to get into a wine session, but there's been a gradual shift in or set of development changes that have made everything we do increasingly more hard over the past 2.5 years, from the way they do the looting to you can't loot while you're in warp to the way Concord is acting in certain systems just passively changed without notes changes. People used to be able to salvage wrecks to grief people from being able to loot, you know, stuff. The big thing though on rigs is Eve is supposed to be about compromise when fitting, right? So there's no real compromise in fitting cargo rigs. You're taking the slowest ship in the game that is the slowest aligner, and you're making it align a little bit slower.
Cargo rigs touch the max speed, not the align time, so not even that.
Right, well, right. And then you take the hull rigs that they're going to get. Those don't do anything to the cargo. So there's no compromise for fitting tank. You can just fit tank.
Well, the cargo's being lowered to compensate for that.
They didn't say that at the time when they announced the changes. And Borchini and myself made some pretty long, here's why you should do this posts. And I think one of my posts got about 270 likes.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they lowered the tank as well, so you can either cargo or tank, but you don't necessarily get the old cargo and the old tank. at the same time.
Well, that's what helps getting 10 of the people on your CSM ballot elected with vote rigging. You can just bug all of them to keep spamming that post in CSM chat until somebody says something about it.
Well, really, I think it's ultimately your guys' fault, because all the Goonswarm people that got hired as developers are now leaving for Riot, so... I mean, really, you just have yourself to blame.
I guess they're moving on to ruin yet another game.
Alright, so, thank you, Powers, and stay on. We're gonna continue on with the rest of the cast, but first, I want to give a little interview to our random wander, Painus Myassus. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, thank you. Myassus is feeling very comfortable here.
All right, so tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us, you know, how you first got into the game.
All right, well, I was in the military, and after my last Iraq deployment, started showing symptoms of PTSD. And so my psychologist told me that what I really needed to do was to take every opportunity I could to immerse myself as exhaustively as I could in an environment of psychotic assholes. And so I found Eve. Now, that's actually not the real story. Or that ended up happening in another way. But I ended up looking for a game because I was at that point in my life where I needed an escape from reality. The wife had just left and the career was on the way down. And I have a Mac. And I had already played at one point WoW and given up on that and was looking for another game that had a Mac client. And so I basically found Eve more or less at random by looking at what MMOs out there have, you know, a Mac client. So I found Eve. And when I got into it, you know, I did not get what I bargained for. I thought I, you know, was going to find some other theme park to just waste 6 hours a day, you know, at a time in my life when I was experiencing a lot of downturns and high stress. And I actually got into, you know, a game that makes chess look like checkers, you know, I mean, just massively involved from a social, intellectual, economic, tactical sense, you know, that because primarily I think because of the way the skill system was designed and the necessity of patience and long-term growth attracted an older you know, a different, not typical MMO player base, I guess you could say. And so I got immersed in Eve that way, or that's how I found Eve, and did all the, you know, had all of the noob aspirations that people have, you know, their first week in Eve. I want to fly a Titan. I want to freaking take over the universe, whatever. And so I found myself out in Tribal Band initially, didn't have the skill points there to, you know, didn't have the skill points, didn't have the knowledge, understanding, didn't have people that really trusted me or that I could trust. So that was my first, I guess, short-lived jaunt into NullSec. I went back into High, piddled around, and then through Recruitment Channel, a guy recruited me into a Solar Fleet Pet Alliance and... had more of the same kind of problems, but through him, I actually met. He was at that time, he's a 4-year vet now. He was a 2-year vet at the time. And it was somebody that, you know, actually I could trust him. He put a lot of time and effort into showing me things. We set up a HiSec corp basically and, you know, had each other's access to, you know, all the hangars and whatnot. A kind of a unique friend relationship in Eve. That's Julian Delfke, who probably deserves a shout out more than Bony Tooth, actually, because he's one of my long time to this day friends in Eve. He's in CVA now. We parted ways in mid 2013, And so after getting some corporate direct, because we actually, that little HiSET Corp, we put together, grew to about 60 members, and I did a lot of the organizational aspects of it and got burned out. So I left that, let my accounts lapse for a month, came back, joined Tribal again with, I guess, you know, I was up to like 15 million skill points at that time. So I gave NullSec another shot and joined EVE Defense Force, and you know, wasn't also, it was you need to be able to fly every single cruiser, and that's going to take you, you know, a month, 2 months, whatever. I was impatient with that, so I ended up leaving again, joining in with I got back in with some Pravi Block people for a little while through my first friend Julian Delfke. And from people? There, found Bomber's Bar.
Which Blew Pravi Block people?
CVA. And that was very short-lived. We got bombed a lot by CVA, or by Bomber's Bar at that time, was doing pretty well. And so I decided to go fly bombers with Bomber's Bar. Did that until I needed to make ISK. And I decided that I didn't want to grind out ISK in incursions or whatnot. I wanted to actually... You know, I think of it like there's the 80% people and the 20% people. And the 80% people, even though they can make billions upon billions by running 12 accounts with IS Boxer and spending 6 hours a day passively playing EVE or whatnot, they're still cranking out every single bit of ISK at a time. But then there's the 20%er who's figured out a way to make even more billions, usually the traders and the sellers and the big time builders. Those guys manage to get into big time money without, I guess, a grind mechanic, you could say. So I went back into HiSET and started putting together another HiSET group, and that did very well. Met another great friend of mine who just recently left EVE, unfortunately, but I learned a lot from him, and then in the wake of his departure and the collapse of our little 50-man corp, I just put my own corp together, and have just recently put some tunes into another NullSec Alliance. I've got my two main combat tunes in Get Off My Lawn for the last 11 days, and so I now got 30 million skill points. I'm worth a few tens of billions, and, you know, I'm going to try and do Null for real. And I guess part of that was spinning up on who's talking on the forums, what's coming out, what's going on at FanFest, and sort of integrating, you know, being an almost three-year player, I'm kind of ready to integrate with the large EVE community, and so I've put some stuff out on the forums and caught your eye, and that's why I'm here tonight.
Yep, and the reason you caught my eye is because in a thread where all these HiSET industrialists were freaking out about how industry is dead and they're quitting and that stuff, I don't have the post in front of me right now. I probably should have done that, but I didn't. You put out a really, like, thoughtful post with lots of perspective and stuff. Do you want to, like, just recap that real quick to all the industrial players that might be listening to this and might be concerned about the changes to industry? We're going to go into them in depth, but just real quick, what's your message to those people?
Well, my message, and it's not a unique message, and there are, I can't remember his name, Weaselore. It just came to my mind. Mm-hmm. From Goon Swarm was also on that same thread and has been
on
some of those.
But he's a goon, you see. And yeah, no one likes those people.
Nobody likes those people, but, you know, my and he's coming from actually a completely different perspective than I am, because I am a small-time HiSET industrialist. So I'm actually the guy that, you know, the wallet is going to get hit the most, even though I don't think it's really going to be that bad. I'm totally in love with a lot of these changes, and we can talk about that later. But we come from a different perspective, but I am not alone in in being supportive of the changes. You know, he's got a lot of money and a lot of space and a lot of connections, and is able to be supportive because, you know, he's got a lot of cards in his deck. But we're kind of unified in the perspective that you know, these things are going to cause some changes. They're not actually dumbing down the game. They're attempts to make certain aspects of the information more visible, logical, and so on. But, you know, if you look at the how costs are calculated with the number of passes and stations and jobs and yada yada, it's gotten a lot more complex, really. But that it's just going to require a player who can adapt. And we can talk, I guess, about the changes and possible effects later on. But basically, I was not too terribly friendly toward a lot of the player base who I think is, you know, we have too many people that have a very sclerotic mindset and will just whine when anything changes. And, you know, he pretty much said that he plans to adapt and make money and have fun, and the changes are good. And I agreed with him with that. And I thought, you know, one of the points that I mentioned is a lot of the people that are the greatest doomsayers and naysayers really haven't paid for the game in a long time. And they're bored with the game, and they're more or less just want to continue doing what they're doing for free, without any particularly great engagement. And, you know, if they left the game, it probably wouldn't hurt anybody, because it's the younger player like myself, or the adaptive player like Weaselore, who's actually excited about the changes and what kind of opportunities they have, that's actually contributing to CCP and the player base. And so, yeah, that was my post that caught your attention. I put a few other posts out, but that was probably my biggest, most profound statement I've added to Eve to date.
All right, so we're gonna get into some of this stuff in a second. We're about to hit Eve news. First, really, I want to ask you, just because I'm a little bit curious, you're a high sec industrialist. What do you build? What's your main market?
I build a lot of T1 modules, bought with Forge Minerals and sold in Jitta for 5 to 10% profit, usually closer to 10%. I'll start whatever's got a 20 or 30% margin, and I'll play the ISK game until about 10%. And I've got maybe 50 to 100 orders open, and right now, as of today, I've got 7 billion on the market, and I've got a little bit of assets in RENs as well. Then that's with my mass T1 production. I've got about 40 plus manufacturing slots on my tunes, and try to keep all that going. So there's a constant trickle of income. And then I also make a fairly regular stream of T2 frigates. So I'm a T2 builder. And then once in a blue moon, I don't have it worked out to where I can just crank them out in mass quantities. But I make a Charon a month or so. And once I can build up liquidate a little bit of my market capital, I'm going to crank out a couple of golems. So basically just starting to get into the larger T2 stuff. So I'm fairly diverse in my building. Lots and lots of cheap T1, stream of frigates, Charon every now and then, and, you know, trying to do some big ships too.
Yeah, you also got that high-end retail brick mortar. I gotcha.
If you want an industry tip, I would recommend killing freighters, then stealing all the T2 BPCs that nobody wants off the space truck, and then building those. That's how I dabbled in industry. We had all these BPCs that were just not selling JITA. And I was like, hey, man, I know we fly these. Why don't I just try and build them? That actually ended up working.
Yeah, cool. I haven't, I mean, for a while, gosh, maybe, you know, 6 months or so, I was dealing with loot and stuff like that. Never been much of a ganker. My PvP experience has been in stealth bombing, cove ops type stuff, done scouting, 5 to 10 man assault frigate fleet, so sometimes 20 man or more, T1 cruisers, that kind of stuff. And I've never really been into PvP for the money. I've always either done some sort of, you know, I've had my day as an incursion grinder, a mission runner. I've been a miner. Right now, I'm heavy on the manufacturing, and I've always used some sort of other mechanism to get ISK, which I would then lose in PvP. You know, I've never been a make money from PvP ganker kind of guy. But I'm sure, you know, I plan on being naive a while, so I'm sure those days are ahead. Just haven't found them yet.
Good power.
Getting money off of ganks was sort of like a byproduct of the griefing aspect of, you know, suicide ganking guys who, you know, up until the point that myself and Warkini started ganking freighters, it was generally safe. Nobody expected somebody to nail you on autopilot. So, you know, we ended up with all this loot and we needed more spaceships to kill more spaceships. So it just turned into like a downhill thing. Anyway, off topic.
All right, moving on to Eve News. We want to talk about Burn JITA, but because we had contracts for it, we're going to talk about it in contract wrap-up. Let's jump right into FanFest, since this is a bit of exciting stuff, and then we'll get into the industrial revamp, which was sort of completed by FanFest and gone over in great detail. We will go over it in great detail. But, first FanFest, Turtle, you did a lot of live reporting for Declarations of War. Why don't you lead us off?
FanFest happened. I was there.
What do you remember about that?
Ninja Turtle, everybody.
No, I mean, if there was an hour with something going on, I mean, I was typically at something. So, you know, the days were like probably 8, 9, 10 hours of just sitting through shit and then, you know, ending with a keynote or something. It's a ton of information to take in. I mean, we did the live thing from Thursday, and then Friday, Saturday were just blog entries. So I mean, you can read those. It's too much to go through. I mean, it's just pages on pages. So I had a great time.
Yeah, you took good notes.
I was the one, the fucking nerd in the back with the notebook, like asking salty questions and shit. So I think that Allie and I probably went to a very different series of talks and roundtables, because I know for a fact I did not see her in one of the ones that I went to. So I'm sure we got very different perspectives on different areas of the game. I went to fun stuff, like stuff I enjoyed personally, like rather than like, oh, what's the biggest soul-crushing issue with the game right now? It's like, so I'm going to go to the QA roundtable instead of like NullSec 1 or, you know, Dust graphics. I mean, I played like 30 seconds of Dust in my life, but I was still super interested in it. And the graphics team ended up being like one of the like bunch of funniest people from CCP I've ever met. So it worked out. I think I skipped like Fleet Warfare or something for that.
What was your highlight?
Honestly, dude, the highlight was getting to play Valkyrie on Morpheus, or getting to play Valkyrie at all, really, I guess, because it probably would have been just as good on Oculus Rift, if not better, but I didn't have to wait in a line for that, so, you know.
What was it like?
It was gorgeous. I'm a big fan of games like War Thunder, just dogfighting games, I guess you could kind of call them, really more than an aircraft sim, because I like the dogfighting aspects of it, and being able to tilt my head backwards, like above and backwards, as far as my neck would allow me to go as physically possible, which is pretty far, but as far as I could go and look backwards, I could see cockpit behind me, and I could see the ships that I was tracking up behind, just right there in front of me. And it was just a whole new dimension to, like, all right, I'm going to fly this one direction until something enters my field of view, and then I'm going to shoot at that thing, and then, like, I'm going to spin around and look for some more shit. It's just, it's completely different. It's, if you like dogfighting, it's just, it's life-changing the first time you played it, because that was the first time I played it. Legion was probably one of the highlights for me, although it did end up fucking me over. It's really funny, because I got to actually look at Rouge in the eyes 20 minutes after he got done with that keynote, that Dust keynote, and I was like, I just raised my hand. I was like, I asked him a question, something about free-to-play, and then later on, I was like, something came up, and I was like, yeah, you really have no idea what you did, like, just at the last keynote, did you? And he looks at me kind of puzzled, and I was like, you pissed off a lot of Dust players, like, really, like, immensely pissed off a lot of Dust players, because it had already started blowing up, like, 30 seconds after the keynote ended 25 minutes early. People were like, well, this is it for Dust, guys, and they just started packing their bags and shit, right? And so I was like, later on, I got to look at him in the face, I was like, you have no idea what you did, and, well, like, 24 hours later, he was coming out that other keynote, just, like, with a completely different story about, the integration between Dust and Legion, like, what he wants to do with it, and, because I literally sat in the first row, or the second row at that presentation where he was like, there's gonna be no Dust Legion Link, and he was very emphatic about the no part of it, and yeah, 24 hours later, he was backpedaling on that. So I think that was probably the most interesting part for me. It ended up fucking me over anyways, because I had to basically then devote 4 or 5 hours that I would have not devoted to Dust. I had to devote it to Dust just to kind of get a sense of what was going on, like, in terms of what is going to happen to them. So I guess in that way, it wasn't so great, but I had a great time.
So what do we know about Legion at this point?
Legion is, well, I don't know. I guess it depends which day of FanFest you're looking at, to be honest. It's a bit like Dust in that it looks a lot like Dust, but from what I'm told, the architecture and all that stuff is a little bit different, which, as I was led to believe before, was the reason that a Dust Legion Link couldn't happen, was just because the technology of it or something, to put it in layman's terms. But
Legion's going to be planet side?
Well, Dust is also planet side, basically. And so,
yeah, I was
but
just
as,
hoping that, like, if they were going to put a first-person shooter in, that it would be more related to Sov warfare than faction warfare, and you'd have, like, stations getting invaded by legionnaires or whatever. You know, that would be a different game, and it would be a justification, in my mind, for keeping Dust and Legion separate games and yada yada, but...
I don't really think it'd be a different game, really.
It's also tricky to do. Like, I do admire their un-CCP-like hesitance to just jump, you know, both feet in on putting Dust into Sov War, because I could see that going incredibly poorly, if not thought out very carefully.
It's a little disappointing that Rouge was the only CCP dev to make any really major, like, publicity gaffe this fan fest. I mean, usually it's at least like 2 or 3 of them at this time. This time it was solely isolated to him. It looks like an awesome game, and frankly, like, people say that, oh, this is the end of Dust. Well, I mean, frankly, any shooter, any game on a console is going to meet its end when the console becomes obsolete. And that is, like, the fundamental reason that, like, console wars exist, is because you can make this thing obsolete and, you know, tempt people to buy the next one. And games live and die within that cycle. And PC kind of breaks that cycle a little bit. And putting something that is like Dust, that is accessible to EVE players who want to just dive into a first-person shooter, because 90% of the people that I talk to that never play DOS but play EVE, they're like, yeah, I don't own a PS3. And it's like, well, yeah, that's a big investment just to play one game. And so
yeah. And to me, that's
breaking that...
the hugest drawback. The big investment for people that are already fans of EVE and would like to play an FPS, if you didn't have a PS3, Dust was never going to motivate you to buy one. Maybe a handful of people have done that, but...
yeah,
certainly, no one I know. And then the other side of it is, like you said, the expiration date. And even when I was in the CSM, this is something I brought up over and over and over again. Like, do you have a plan for what happens when people move on to the next Call of Duty or the PlayStation 4 comes out? At the time, PS4 hadn't been announced when I was around. But it was one of those things, like, you're releasing it for the PlayStation 3. We all know the next gen is coming.
Yeah.
You are saying that right now that there's no plans and no talks about it. Like,
it wasn't even a PS3 launch. It was like 4 years after PS3 launched. Like, yeah, next gen was already impending. That's the thing. So, like, I don't know. It was a bit of a dumb move, I think. But porting it onto PC and then, as you saw in the keynote, kind of unifying all three concepts between Eve, Valkyrie, and Dust. Like, it's basically, I don't know, they did basically a complete 180 in the last year on their development strategies, more or less.
That single sign-on concept is amazing.
Yeah,
imagine if you just fire up one launcher, and then you could pick what game you want to play. There was no way in hell I was going to move my PS3 all the way into the room with my computer and hook it up to one of my monitors. No way, because I use that thing for media stuff. I use it to play casual games with my friends when they come over. I mean, it's just, I'm not going to buy another PS3 to do that. So the whole thing, to me, was just like them going all in on something that was never going to be interesting to me. And then I tried to play it, and lo and behold, I didn't really get interested in it, because I was playing Planetside 2.
Yeah, just in general, I mean, probably the highlight was Siegel's keynote and how they described more or less how they're planning to fix, like, 4 out of 5 of the biggest legacy code issues in the game. Or at least that's kind of the general intention. And it's one of the big reasons I went to the QA roundtable, too, is to get a little more information on that. And they seem pretty optimistic about it, I'll put it that way.
That was probably the moment for me where I didn't get to watch tons of the FanFest stream because most of it was happening while I was at work. But I made sure that I watched the keynote. And that was like, oh my God. I felt so happy.
Right? You fell in love with CCP again, didn't
you? There were manly tears. Like, this is all the stuff that I think part of CSM6, certainly most of CSM7, we struggled against. And I know CSM8 probably had to deal with this even more because it was happening at the moment. But, like, to finally see them tackle what... Because you gotta remember, I was in CSM4. This is when we... like, delivered them a really well-thought-out, multi-page proposal of how they could redo corporate roles with more of a, like, a PHPB forum-based permissions thing, which everybody is familiar with. Elven Lord, our chairman, was, like, it was his signature thing. And then, basically, just go, like, well, we're not even going to look at it because we can't touch the corporate roles code. It's too big. And, like, the look in Elven Lord's eyes when they said that, I'll never forget it. He was so heartbroken.
Well,
and
that's
I
it.
I think
like,
we're all frustrated about it. Like, Keldon Mervan was frustrated about it. I've been frustrated about it. If you've done any kind of corporate role work, I'm sure Powers knows what I'm talking about. Freaking pain in the ass.
There's a lot of like older guys from CCP too on the QA side of things, like guys like Goliath and X Hagen and like Erlander, like, and all these guys. At one point, it was like, how many of your dreams have you seen crushed by legacy code? Like, I just flat out asked them, because I know it's probably like a number that you can't count on just one hand.
Oh yeah, so that they're actually going to do that it's part of the plan to get us to where these Stargates are jumping off. I think that's probably the hugest thing for me, and the only thing better would be, like, completely redoing the ship piloting system. That would be the only possible bigger announcement in my head. So I am so pleased, and I can't wait to be playing when that happens. Can finally give people in Noir all the roles they need to steal stuff from us. It'll be a glorious day.
Well, I'd never have figured out roles. Warkini will make titles that have specific roles, and I give those titles to people on our alt cards for handing out ships. And, like, to this day, I cannot figure out how to give somebody hangar roles on specific hangars, and I've tried everything.
Allie, let's talk about your FanFest experience.
So my FanFest experience included the two CSM things. We had the CSM panel, where we had some interesting discussion about the CSM voting process and sort of publicity process and awareness and all that. The discussion was, I had made a comment about, you know, the people who are showing up at the CSM panel being pretty engaged, and then Two Step got up and asked people to raise their hands if they hadn't voted, and a lot of people raised their hands. and
wow, in the panel.
I don't know if the Twitch stream replay will show this, but it, a lot of people raised their hands, and then he invited them up to the mic to explain why they hadn't voted. You know, some people were saying that, like, it was a lot of work to figure out who to vote for. You know, some sort of just in general, the CSM, I was sort of later thinking of it as, boring as, you know, as boring as C-SPAN or whatever.
I found that panel to be very entertaining from a stream perspective.
It was
because one of the very first questions was like, why are you guys wasting so much time worrying about trying to get people to vote who aren't going to vote just so they could vote for you? That made me laugh. That was some dude from PL.
That was headline. Huh. And I can understand what, you know, I can understand some of what he was saying. Like, what he was trying to get at was, you know, represent the people who elected you, come talk to them, come, you know, don't necessarily go chasing more people. Although as someone who was trying really hard to get reelected, anyone new who I can bring in is someone who will vote for me and who hasn't necessarily heard from one of those other guys yet. So it, new voters are fertile territory for reelection campaigns. But, and then someone was joking that, they didn't vote because, Elise wasn't running, but some decent discussion there. The first question was, you know, Eve is dying. Does the CSM care?
that was such an idiotic question. I wanted to like punch that guy, but I couldn't. I was really far away.
I don't know if you saw all of our expressions.
The answer for that one.
Yeah, I saw everybody deadpan like, the fuck did you just say?
No, the CSM.
Hi, I went
no
to FanFest.
Yeah.
He is dying.
I came here specifically to tell you, sir.
I paid CCP several hundred dollars and pumped like 2,000 bucks into the Iceland economy to tell you that Eve is dying and we should all be worried.
Everyone run for the hills. But yeah, so there was that. There was the CSM roundtable, which was on Saturday early afternoon. Everyone was a little, you know, the worse for wear. We had tinfoil hats, though. I have a great picture of me wearing a tinfoil hat that is now my Facebook profile picture, thanks to that panel.
Fashionable.
And
yeah, that's probably the best picture of any CSM ever.
It's a good picture.
Like eight of you lined up with these hats.
Yeah, Mike Azariah made those. Good deal.
Yeah, I got to meet like guys like Mike Azariah and Ripper Tag and Trevor Dadu and DNS Black. I got a hug from DNS Black like that.
Aw.
Yeah, it was adorable, actually. He's a very nice person.
Did he let you get a word in?
Yeah, actually. I mean, we chatted for a couple of minutes here and there every time we ran into each other, and he's a nice guy. He used it as a good way to like connect with his kid too. Like he brought his son along too, and his son his son had a fucking blast too for everything that I saw. So
yeah, DNS Black, contrary to his appearance in the podcast, like he's a really nice guy in real life. Like
I'm sure,
I loved hanging out with him.
Seems like he talks a lot.
Ripper Tag,
him and Diana and some of the and what you call it, the SI Radio guys who have since mostly left the game. But those were like the four people I spent most of my time with when I was at FanFest. It was them and Seismic Stan.
Ripper Tag immediately recognized me as the guy who said he doesn't PvP anymore, to which I sharply countered that I also alluded him to Hitler once. it was cool to meet him.
I think the most interesting thing that I saw at FanFest was actually the new player experience panel. CCP Rise got up on stage, and this was my Seagull moment, although I guess both of those moments had been ruined by CSM summits, but Which is what happens when you're on the CSM FanFest. Everything that's exciting is not exciting, because you know it all already. But except for when they said faction stations, I thought they meant faction outposts. And so I said very loudly, and the guy in front of me cracked up, "Wait, what?"
Yeah, I got hyped up for that for 1 minute, and I was like, sweet, I could run this 10 out of 10 and a Garista's outpost will drop. And then I can sell that back to the Alliance for a retarded amount of money. And then I was like, wait.
You realized what it was. It's a ship skin for a station.
That's pretty much my thought process as well, except for the fact that my Alliance would buy anything from me. Go ahead, Ellie.
But yeah, they're taking the new player experience, and they're some of the stuff was kind of very basic, like adding better tooltips in and whatnot, but they have a fairly decent philosophy for the new player experience in terms of trying to make it more sandboxy, trying to make it, trying to encourage people to solve their own problems instead of just kind of, you know, spoon feeding them the mission content, which is, there's a great slide. It's just fantastic at teaching people how to mission. You get like 50% of people, I think was the slide graphic. 40% of people start the game and then don't even make it past the tutorial. 50% of people go to missioning and then a lot of them drop out. And 10% of people actually play after they start the game.
That's not a bad retention rate, actually. It's a higher percentage than I would have thought, I guess.
Doesn't sound that great to me.
Well, you gotta weed out the 13-year-olds, you know, the people that are gonna see all the Titan battles on the news and say, man, you know, the biggest PvP experience ever in an MMO, and say, man, I want to be a part of that, are gonna be 13, you know, and I mean, they're gonna join, and I guess like I did, want to have a Titan within a week, and when they find out that it's gonna take them a few years, you know, they leave. And are those really the kind of people that we want? The people that join because they see something exciting and find out instantaneously, this is not my bag, can go. Well, my heart bleeds a little bit more for the type of person that the 40% that gets into the missioning, gets into the PvE game, the game-generated content type stuff, but never gets into the metagame, the null politics game, the faction, you know, all the stuff that really makes EVE a living game.
It doesn't have to be null politics. It can be industry.
Yeah, and how much of that is, it's not necessarily that they're, this game's going to take hard work to get wherever I want to go. I don't think the new player experience really does a good idea of telling players what's possible. And it's just like, it goes through all the most boring parts of the game, the stuff that CCP probably needs to redo after they get done with the corporate roles and the industrial and all the things that were talked about in the keynote. Like, this is like, after you get past those hurdles, this is like the next mountain, which is the EVE NP or the EVE PvE experience, which is pretty bad.
There's no real clear end game for PvE, and there's no clear end game for it. If people are going into a game where they're used to PvEing so they could pay for PvP and stuff like that, there's no real clear end game. For somebody like me who has a pretty good support network, when I join EVE, I get free spaceships, and I get free money, and I get free skill books. And all I gotta do is just log into Jabber, show up for content, and it's really easy. More people need that.
Yeah, well, comparatively speaking, for everyone, it's a lot easier now than it was, say, like 5 or 10 years ago, to re-roll like 6 to 12 characters to get your stats right.
Yeah. Well, like, there is no end game for me. I'm a diplomat, so I'm constantly interacting with people. I can do PvP stuff. I have several characters that have trained up a bunch of skill points, but I can fly most everything because of various choices I've made financially in EVE. You know, I don't have to PvE. I can do all kinds of fun stuff. And I think that's what the end game should be for a lot of people, and they'll eventually get there.
Well, that touches on a good point, because that's really what the end game is. I mean, when you said, you know, your diplomatic thing is your end game, it's that player-driven interaction as opposed to the computer-driven interaction, which exists in certain aspects of the game, like missions or incursions, but like, I don't think you could ever argue that's where the end game for EVE has ever lied. I think it's, while it has been a little bit unclear, and, you know, maybe it's only recognizable in hindsight, like the player-driven interactions are the end game right. for basically everybody.
Yeah, so it's CCP-generated content ultimately boils down to grinding fairly quickly, and what keeps EVE exciting month after month and year after year is the player-generated content.
Well, the sooner that people have that epiphany and realize that interacting with other people is the game, it's an MMO, right? As soon as you figure that out, it's totally different game.
Right, so the question for Allie and the other people working on the new player experience is how do you put that into the tutorial, basically?
Right. And one of the things that Rise was talking about was like helping people to do goal setting instead of just giving people more information about what's going on, giving people sort of nudging them towards like, this is a game where you set goals for yourself and you achieve those goals, rather than this is a game where you talk to an NPC and the NPC tells you to go kill 10 turtles or whatever.
The fuck?
Yeah, it's like finite shit.
The first
shit.
Animal I can think of. But the NPC tells you to go out and get 10 rabbit pelts or whatever whatever the hell it is. And that the fact that CCP is now thinking about the NPE in that kind of a way is, and they are in fact working on PvE content tools, is just amazing.
So I guess the two biggest thing, I want to keep us on time here, so we're not, I guess we'll talk about them later. But I want to mention the ship skinning experiment, obviously quite a success, because CCP has talked in the keynote in quite clear terms about being able to put your Alliance logo on your ship, and they showed
actual
video.
They didn't say Alliance
video.
Logo. They showed video of people customizing their ships with
in real time, with patterns
with
and
patterns.
Colors.
But no Alliance logos. They talked about Corp logos.
Didn't look like a Corp logo to me on that ship, but
if it was an Alliance logo, I will take this back, but I think this piece of hair splitting is unfortunately necessary.
Fine. But I'm hoping they will upscale that promise as it goes on, because the Alliance logos are frankly more interesting. Having the option to do either one would be cool. Like this way, the Goon Swarm B is not a Corp logo. The Nora Mercenary Group silhouette is not a corporate logo. The Black Legion Eagles, not corporate logo. None of the corps that have those iconic, I'm taking some liberty saying our logo is iconic, but none of the alliances that have that, or groups that have that, have corporate logos which remotely approach their identity and passion that they have with the symbols of the Alliance logos.
I agree with that. And it's a lot less work for them, because there's a whole lot less Alliance logos than there are Corp logos.
But the Alliance logos are, you know, lower quality and maintained by players rather than maintained by CCP, so there's...
No, they are maintained by
CCP. Also, they're also
Once you
figments.
Get into them, you can't touch them or update them. But I would say that probably the way that CCP will go, or I would say should go, is decide to put Alliance logos in, and then just in that process of making that a thing that happens, they go through the Alliance logos of active alliances, of which there will probably be a couple hundred, but not that many. I would say less than. And then just take a look. This one probably needs to be reviewed because it's not showing up on the models right. And then mail the executors of those alliances And if they don't get back to them, you just delete that logo. And if you do get back to them, give them the opportunity to put a new one in.
Or a higher quality one. I know this is possible because Hendrik Talardar from Waffles, you may also know him as an editor from Levantine.com, took a purifier, put it in a modeler, was yanking out textures, and he just put a waffle logo on each launcher, and then he put a waffle logo on top of the purifier. And then when he showed it to me, I was like, well, I really meant I wanted you to take a picture of an actual waffle and put it on each launcher because then the torpedoes would shoot out waffles. But he didn't do that.
Excellent. I think that's probably a symptom more of like alliances not existing, probably more than anything else. But ship skinning is awesome. I just wish
it's a symptom. What it's really a symptom is a lot of the alliance logos were designed before the idea of being able to put them on a ship was a real thing. So some of them don't translate very well. But
at the end of the day, they can just wrap.
Say again?
They can just wrap. Like, certain contours and texture, like, there's certain surfaces on certain ships where that won't work, and that'll just take them figuring out the shape and how big the area that the logo can go on, because they put little tiny ship manufacturer logos on each one of those skins, right? Yeah. So they could knock out a certain little area that could sit on it. You know, they're going to have to go through every ship model, right? That's just going to happen. So they would just figure out the best placement for each one. That's going to take, like, one guy, like, 20, 30 minutes per ship, maybe. I don't know. I'm not a developer. It's going to take a guy to look at it and say, all right, it'll fit on that model in that spot. And that's how much real estate we're going to give it. But the other concept is, are they going to make us pay, like, 200 Aurum per ship to have your fucking logo on there?
Well, that's my other thing. Is, like, because that whole idea came off, correct me if I'm wrong, but it came out of the Little Things thread, being able to, like, customize your ship in some way, and then, like, immediately it just drops into, like, a microtransaction tied to a Plex, and it's like, I get that you can buy them off market and stuff, but it still starts from where it starts. It starts from somebody purchasing a Plex, and it just seems like a little bit of a backhanded compliment to, like, yeah, we're gonna give you this, but you know, it's, you gotta pay for it.
Here's the thing though, like, as an Alliance CEO who would like logos on our ships, both to have them to reinforce people's connection with the organization for video purposes, like when people zoom in on the ships, it's there. If we're doing our own shooting, it's there. I would happily pay, like, so much RM per month to allow everyone in my alliance, say, to put the logo on the ship. Like, to offer it as an organizational level expense. I think a lot of people would pay it.
I'm sure there are. It's more the concept, the principle of it to me, I guess.
If that's what it takes to have it happen, I don't mind it, to be honest. Because it's something I really wanted for a long time, and I know that I'm not alone, and I know that a lot of other instigator-type people, if we want to bring in Seagull's terminology, like the high-level people, the powers types, the Alec types, the corp CEOs, the guys that make the videos, the guys that spend a lot of time looking at their ship because they're doing hauling and stuff, this is the sort of thing that motivates them, and those are the kind of people that CCP wants to be appealing to as we move into this increasingly player-driven thing where we're building Stargates and all that kind of stuff. Like, that kind of content and that kind of coordination is going to need those people. And give them a fucking logo on the ship if that's going to make them happy, you know what I mean? Especially since the tech is out there. I think it's something that CCP will find themselves evolving into. That's my bold prediction. Speaking of bold predictions, when we talk about the CSM election, I was right about something that almost nobody else was right about, and I can't wait to brag about it.
What was that?
Oh, it's the Russians.
Interesting.
Nobody else called that it but me, that I know of. Everybody else was like, oh, well, of course the Russian candidate. And I was like, yeah, maybe. We'll talk about all the CSM goodiness in a second here. Let's move on to the industry revamp. This is why we have Painus on, in addition to the fact that he's a cool dude. But we really want to talk about all the industry changes. They finally all came out, and the verdict is In terms of the raw economics, probably not as big of a deal as most people were doom and glooming about when they found out that they couldn't build things in Sobiseki, and like the entire game couldn't do that anymore at the same time and still make the same amount of money. So that part broke their hearts, but either the people that said they were going to quit actually did and stopped paying attention, or it feels like a lot of the other indie players have calmed down. And I think for good reason. They seem fairly balanced. So basically what's going on is they're completely redoing ME and PE, and they're just, instead of like each BPO having a different number where that is ideal, it's going to be in a scale of 1 to 10. There's going to be scaling costs. So if you build with tons of people in one system, you know, you guys are going to have higher costs for that. But on the other hand, certain systems with high amounts of production facilities in them are going to have better modifiers. So it's going to be this sort of balance where people are going to gravitate to certain areas to produce things, but they're also going to have some incentives to spread out as well. And it's going to depend on, you know, how the market is reacting and whether your current situation is ideal or you need to move. And that's also tied into this Teams feature, which is going to...
That's the wild card aspect. That's right. You can craft your space into what you want if you've got, you know, the right other people and the right teams come up and yada yada.
So the teams are NPCs and you can bid on them, and the bids go into like a system-wide pool. And if you win the bid, if your system wins the bid for that team, and for a certain period of time this team comes in and provides certain bonuses for whatever type of manufacturing they're related to. Like, some teams might be real good at producing Tech 2 frigates. So if you win the bid for them, then all your Tech 2 frigate builds get a modifier, for instance. Which is... it's interesting. I like that it's dynamic. I think, overall, I guess we'll talk with Powers a little bit about whether it's making 0-0 viable. I think that it is. Yeah, and I want to talk with Allie about the complexity. So let's go with Powers first off.
Well, my first question is, are those Teams things, are they going to be exposed in the API? Because if yes, that means I can follow them around and gank people as they move BPOs and BPCs. But for 0-0, this is a big dynamic shift for 0-0. We're like rethinking totally how we stage, you know, our systems with ICE, where our refineries and how our refinery clusters are. Because if you look at somewhere like Declan, you'll notice every refinery always pretty much has a factory next to it, or maybe two factories. And it doesn't really pay to build stuff in NullSec, but people rough it and will build rigs anyway, because you can sometimes buy a lot of salvage on the cheap from dudes who just need the money, who are out salvaging after people that are ratting and things like that. And we're talking about big shifts in like where our main system is, right? Because you could theoretically do better with a station that's fully upgraded and another with other stuff, because the seated NPC player stations aren't that good. They're now going to be dog shit compared to player-owned and built outposts because of the ability to upgrade.
Right.
So, in 2 years, VFK might not be our capital anymore.
So, Miss, I'm actually not hijacking the conversation into something else, but I gotta ask Mrs. Non-Disclosure Agreement if she can tell us anything about the Rorqual. Because the cost scaling, from what I've seen in my area, and I'm still looking into it, and I'm not an expert, but I've just joined a Null Alliance, and I've been doing thinking about how to get stuff going in Null, and how that relates to what I have going on in High, and the cost scaling is a strong incentive to work a certain way, but I just don't know if the cost scaling is there's still too many options for a high secker to make some changes in his operation and switch some stuff around and, you know, shipping of what's going to be compressed ore around is going to be a huge factor. Shipping and producing materials locally is still going to be a huge factor in whether it actually vitalizes NullSec industry or not. And
you know what? Related to the Rorqual, now that you mention it, Painus, now that there's going to be a POS module to allow for ore compression, like, what's going to be done for the Rorqual, which is something like a player has to be logged in, they have to be out in space, they have to put themselves, well, ideally, they would have to put themselves at a bit of risk to be able to compress the ore. Are there any plans for the balance team to take a look at the Rorq in general?
Well, I thought they still wanted to look at the Orca Rorqual.
Yeah, they were supposed to have looked at it back when the Lynx thing happened, but never
got
done.
They said, pertaining to the POS mod compression change, basically that they realize that this leaves the Rorqual in a bad place. And they're sorry about that, want to fix it, etc. But it is what it is, basically.
I feel like we're getting into the NDA territory where it seems like it's really
NDA
close
territory.
On the horizon. You don't have
you
to come.
Tell.
Well,
the NDA
that they know it's
territory.
An issue, and we'll be looking at it, as I think,
yeah.
As good as you could say.
Well, you mentioned stuff about local production. Well, your alliance is in Delve, right? So
not the
most
best.
People... Well, no, what I'm going to get to is most people have always said, why do I need to produce locally when I can just get a JF pilot and a JF? And that will save on all of that. I don't ever have to worry about local production because a jump freighter pilot is much more important to my alliance than an industrialist. They provide a better service and a better solution. Well, you have direct access to NPC Dell. So let's say you mine a bunch of whatever the hell, and prior to these refining changes they just announced, you could just go do perfect refines there, and your alliance would never get any of the refine tax or whatever because it'd be straight into an NPC station. Well, they're moving all of this so that it makes sense to do things in your station, and they're trying to develop NullSec to be self-sufficient. Theoretically, but that's
well,
never
more so. Grayscale, I've read and heard and believe, still, you know, goes for he still advocates a sort of a specialization of space and a non-independence and so on. But yeah, you've seen as far back as Odyssey with the, you know, the moon and the mineral rebalancing, a push to try to get more stuff going on in NullSec, but like our situation in Delve with a big chunk of NPC Null is that we have an uneradicatable enemy. We can't just take their sov and kick them out. And so we have
always...
Well,
the implication there is that they want sov. They don't.
No, they want kills. And so
right.
It's harder for us to mine. It's harder for us to do this sort of thing than it is... You know, like further down in period basis, but I could talk with my friendly goon Diplo offline about all kinds of, you know, wonderful things. But anyway, what I'm saying is that unless you're a goon or a renter, you know, in deep dark NullSec, I mean, it's kind of hard for even the smaller sov holding alliances to
disagree.
Get a.
Because
the goons don't have it as easy as people
think,
especially with Noir in the area. Noir, Black Legion, Moa, we pretty much put them through the ringer every night.
Okay, well, I mean, and you know, I stand corrected on that. I didn't mean to ruffle any feathers by saying that.
No, what I'm saying is your alliance leader is one of the better industrialists in NullSec, period. Basil knows this shit. He ran the jump freighter service for your alliance. I mean, when it comes to logistics and industry, that guy is extremely smart.
Yeah,
and he knows how to make use of your space to the maximum because he hangs out with our 3 or 4 finance guys that are ridiculous geniuses when it comes to this stuff. So, like, he's one of those masterminds that you... I mean, you don't know him very well yet, but he'll... let you guys in on how to make a shitload of money with whatever
I
changes
see him
he's
already. presenting the Alliance with opportunities to do things in the space that members of the Alliance are having difficulty taking him up on, because a lot of their preconceptions and also because of some of the legitimate difficulties being in the space. And like, so, you know, I stand corrected, even Goons doesn't have it easy because of Noir and other
mostly
entities.
Black Legion.
And Black Legion. And so
let's be real, it's mostly okay. Them.
and so basically, and this is one thing that I wanted to ask you, or really more of a like a weasel lore, a big time goon industrialist, long term industrialist, but since I have you here, powers, like, if the Rorqual and additional ships and game mods and tweaks really tipped the balance in favor of mining, like, say a Rorqual, you hit the industrial command and a fucking POS bubble. Oh, can I swear on this program?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, and a POS bubble comes out, you know, and something that, I mean, just wrecks, you know, the industry predator, you know, reigns on his parade, to where it is now easy to gather resources in NullSec. Would that just ruin your game? You know, so, would that be something that you would just, you know, rage quit over or bitch at CCP
you
over?
Don't understand. I think you have a fundamental misunderstanding of NullSec. NullSec is never going to be safe. There are certain risks that you accept when you go about doing certain things at NullSec. Like, for example, the renters in the Kalevala Edge, a lot of them mine. They called for a mining CTA on a lovely, I'm going to say, Saturday morning. But the Big Red Boat and I found out about the night before. He told me, he said, hey, I need you to move a dictor here. We were originally going to go after 4 Rorqual and a bunch of miners multiboxing, right? Because you can do that with relative ease. You know, you have, if you scout your systems, if you have active PvPers in the area, you're constantly looking for content, right? So those guys figured they'd have it fine. They would just bridge and jump themselves into the system and hang out. We thought they were going to take gates and jump the Rorquals in, and then we would catch the Rorquals. We later found out that they planned on using Titans to bridge their fleet there and bridge their fleet back. They went and did this. We killed their Titan. But the point is, goons, there are goons that mine. There are goons that mine ice. There are goons that do industry, and all they do is mine. Like, there was a guy with, like, a 12-man Hulk fleet, and he has a Rorqual. And he actually takes the Rorqual out and puts it in a belt or a mining anomaly, which blows my mind, because that has to be one of the worst decisions that I think I can name, right? Because
it's
easy to catch that guy in a number of ways, but he does it. And I think he's only lost a Rorqual once, and he lost it on the VFK beacon because he asked if it was clear and then jumped 2 minutes later and got owned.
Well, the point that you're trying to make with me is that, you know, and I'm aware of it, is that there's risk and reward. And I got that. But right now, in order to get your tentacles out and really dug in NullSec industry, is really hard for the industrialists.
No,
and like you said, a lot of people are doing it. And
you have to change your alliance culture. You have to have a standing fleet that you all hang out in. When you know bad guys are coming, you guys all reship, kill them. Don't dock up and lock off. That's the worst shit ever. Just fight. Be willing to do stuff
Here's the thing, I think what he's talking about is the actual, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Pants, but I think what you're talking about is the actual, like, getting out to an alliance there as an industrial player, right?
There's plenty
I am talking about that, but then also, and Powers's point is actually right on, because a tremendous number of the problems with the way things are going in NullSec industry has to do, can only be fixed by the player base and has to tune with the player base, and no amount of tweaking or offering cost bonuses here and there or redistributing mineral wealth and moon goo and all that, none of that is going to change it. It's got to really be done with the player base. So I'm totally with him on that. I'm with him on the I got what he was saying about risk versus reward, and I am 100% in agreement that the player base is the answer. Doing things correctly is the answer, and that's the way that EVE winning is done. My question, though, specifically was if CCP introduced a mechanic, because right now it's tilted to where you've got to be really freaking smart and really freaking set up and have the right culture in order to get away with industry in Null, and not a lot of people have it. Yeah, and CCP wants it to happen and wants it to happen, and they're introducing all of these freaking game mechanics and doing all this stuff in order to stimulate NullSec industry, and I don't think really any of it's going to work unless they introduce something that totally changes the risk versus reward, where currently there's a lot of risk and a lot of work for some reward. If they make it to where it's just freaking easy, and now the deck is slightly stacked or heavily stacked against the industrialist, but if, and I want to ask Powers, if they heavily stacked it against the Predator, and they made it, you know, there's still risk and reward.
They introduced
but if
the prospect. There
yeah,
you go.
You know, well, that's
the
one
risk
thing.
Is gone.
They're giving some mining board just damage bonuses. Trust me, it's going to be a lot more dangerous.
If they'd left Jonasus where it was, you could have had a whole mining fleet assigned drones to one dude, and when a bad guy showed up, bonk.
That actually literally happened to me fairly recently. In the contract we're going to be talking about, I warped in on, I think it's Space Monkeys? Yeah, it was SMA. Yeah. In PTEC 3, which is their main mining system, and I warped in and landed like 40 off a ginormous cloud of Mackinaws and Hulks. I think it was maybe 30 of them, and they had one Drake overwatching them all, and I was like, oh shit, I had a fleet with me and everything. I was like, I'm gonna charge in there, I'm gonna point one of these guys, and they're all gonna book it, and we're gonna kill one of these Mackinaws. This is gonna be great. So I roll in there, I keep, you know, I make sure that I move around the Drake and stuff, and I go, I point one of the mining barges. They don't move. They send this enormous cloud of Warrior 2s at me. Like, just blotting out the sun. And I was like, huh, that can be bad. So, but I got my speed up, it's going alright. I have to make a turn to, like, because the Drake is, like, trying to angle himself so that he can catch me in my orbit, so I have to make a slight turn. And as I make the turn, my speed drops, the Warriors all get on me, and I instantly go to, like, 10% armor. I'm like, whoa, time to leave! And then I got the fuck out of there. And I was like, so guys, about that Mac fleet that I called? Yeah, we're just gonna keep going, and as a matter of fact, does anyone have any structure repair bots?
That's when you roll out the Proteus. And fit all your mids as points, and yep, then light your covert Sido and make all of them die.
Yeah. So I think to get on sort of the point about whether this will revitalize NullSec industry, it won't. I think you're dead on that it won't. Partly or entirely because of the risk and reward and the logistical issues and all that stuff that exists. But it will provide the structure that is necessary so that if NullSec had more people in it, if the way that you are able to move small quantities of minerals around changed, you know, maybe change some stuff about some of the input requirement, the input volumes to build some T2 ships. If you were actually able to do local production, which you're not at the kind of scale that's profitable. You can produce locally, but you're going to have to export some in order to make some money. If NullSec was actually consuming in one place multiple industrialists of output, and you may do that in VFK, but I'm not sure, but that may be the only hub where that's true, then it would work. And what CCP's done in the summer release in this Kronos expansion patch, whatever, is laying the groundwork so that that can happen eventually.
So the final point that I'd like to make, because I promised we'd go in depth, but we do have other things to talk about in this podcast. This is already getting pretty long. I think the one thing that this industrial expansion is not doing that it probably should do, and something that I think it's not as big of a priority as some of the other things that CCP Seagull talked about, but when I see them touch E features, I want them to do it all the way, as much as possible. I think the one thing that this expansion is not covering and should cover is ways for industrialists to work together at the corp and alliance level. When Teams came out, I thought that's what that was going to be, but then it turned out to be the NPC thing, which is also cool. But right now you can mine as a group, and like you can IS box it too, which I hate, but you know, it's a multi-ship activity. Everybody's working together on it. Production, on the other hand, it's like it's a one character thing. You make a thing, and then you either sell it or you take that thing and then you make the other thing out of it, or you buy the first part and then make the other thing. There's no way for, I guess, unless you want to call running a corp, or running a POS rather, a social activity. But like, for instance, if I were to say, oh man, I'm so excited about the industrial expansion, I want Noir to stop being a mercenary alliance, I want us to do industry now. What does that actually mean? Because, and I wish to God I remembered who posted this, and if you're listening to this and it was you, I'm sorry that I don't remember your name. But somebody posted about an industrial player is complaining that it's hard for him to get into the 00 Alliance to take advantage of all this stuff because he's an industrial player. And then some 00 guy came in and posted and was like, well, yeah, because there's no reason that a 00 Alliance would want to take an industrial player when they could take a PvP player that does industry on his alt. Or just take a PvP player that does, that puts in industry jobs before he goes out to PvP for that alliance. And that's a thing. Like, corps should be able to work together. There should be some kind of alliance level industry thing beyond sharing spreadsheets and stuff. Also, the fact that you still need spreadsheets after the industrial expansion, which I think is a bit of a missed opportunity.
You'll never need spreadsheets for that.
You should not need spreadsheets. In the industry UI, there should be a way to input your build costs to get the cost of the finished product. Like, there's no reason that that's not there. That's just silly.
You use the spreadsheets to record the cost of multiple finished products so that you can compare across a whole wide range of values.
Which is good for a hardcore player. And maybe even that should be in the client, too. But what about the casual player? If I am doing industry for the first time, I have no idea, aside from getting out a spreadsheet or doing like tons of calculations, whether or not the thing that I'm about to build will make me less money if I were to build it than if I were to sell all the stuff. And that's a bit
of an
oversight.
You do. I might be wrong. I might be misremembering the UI, but I thought that was in there.
I didn't see it. And it hasn't been talked about if it is. It's something that probably should be. I don't know if that's something you want to confirm with the UI team when you get a chance, but... like, I paid this much for the trit, and then it takes a look at how much trit that it's actually going to be using, and then it factors in all the build costs, and be like, this is the absolute bare minimum you need to sell this for to break even. That number is good. A new player getting into industry shouldn't need, like, advanced Excel wizardry and the desire to build an Excel spreadsheet for the entire EVE item database to be able to find that out. That's just how I feel. And the other end of it is, there's no reason for that player to communicate with other people in his corp, because they can't build things together, really.
That's the real reason. Like, when somebody wants to join Gensworld Federation as just an industrialist, That's just some dude who's hanging on and suckling off the teat of the work that other people are doing. We want people to do stuff, to have fun, to be involved. We want a reason for you to hang out, right? We're a community that they don't really offer anything into the community.
Yeah, so I don't know in what form that would take, but if they were to do a point, any kind of point release or any kind of relook at industry after what they're doing with it now, those would be the two areas that I would say still not quite ready for prime time, in that it doesn't have the costs, a way for players to see the costs of the build without going outside the client, and there's no real social component for industrials outside of maybe building an outpost, which like is probably the end game indie content. Outposts and Titans, maybe. So it would be nice if people could like build ships together that aren't super caps, and you could have industrial corps that are more than just a collection of people that chat while they basically play a solo game. Anyway, moving on. If hope any of that feedback is valuable, Allie, that it makes its way to the appropriate people. And finally, a real quick thing. Gentleman's Agreement and Lost in Eve are collapsing, merging? I don't know exactly how you would phrase it, but I believe Powers has the inside story.
Yeah. So, Gents has sort of been on a light leadership thing for a while. They went on a deployment to Colorville Expanse when the Eastern War kicked off, and they reset the SOV levels on a lot of systems, I want to say about half, and they kept drawing people from the East up north to deal with that, and they decided to wind that down, but their leadership that was there were kind of AFK and not really relaying the successes that they were having, and they basically met all the expectations that everybody had of them for that deployment. They went back. Test and EMP decided that they were going to invade Vale of Silent. And that's what really highlighted the crisis in leadership that they were having. They had people that were active in the Eastern War, but they just didn't have people that could get them motivated or wrangled to do things for timers. And it was just exacerbated by that. And when they wrapped that up and some dudes came along to help out and booted all the terrible people out of Vale, Kasper North, around the new year, gave a State of the Alliance speech wherein he explained to everybody that he had been dealing with clinical depression and that it was affecting everything in his life, including Eve. And he did a really heartfelt explanation. He explained to people what happens when you get depressed. And I learned a lot from that. And I went and saw a psychologist about 3 months after that and realized that some of the malaise and stuff that he was talking about, some things that I've been dealing with for about 10 years. But anyway, I thought depression meant you were sad all the time, but that's not what it means. It, you know, just means you stop caring and some other things. But, so Kasper was trying to explain that while there were a few people that he appointed to help out, there was nobody really helping him guide the Alliance direction, which had always been Lake and a few other guys like Nova Rain and Ryan RS and Shang Po, a few Gents leadership types. A lot of those guys were dealing heavily with real life. So he said, I'm going to try this, give this another shot. You know, let's see what we can do for the next X amount of months. Didn't really say anything. Behind the scenes, a lot of corps were shopping around trying to find somewhere else to go prior to that and after that, just because they didn't like the dynamic and leadership. It was, the people weren't stepping up to help Kasper. A lot of the entrenched guys with space power weren't really doing anything but sitting around and telling puns on Jabber. So it finally came down to the point where Kasper was like, I'm done running an alliance. I'm tired of this. I need to make changes in my life. I'm getting a new job. I just want to sit back and space retire and have fun and play with other people and You do not have to have all this responsibility. Nobody really stepped up to try and help that had been helping lead up until that point. And all the guys that were AFK, but holding onto the little space fiefdoms and gents, decided that they all of a sudden wanted to run the Alliance when they did absolutely nothing up until that point to help Kesper. And Kesper handed it over to the one guy who had been helping the whole time, and that guy just said, I want to wind this Alliance down, and you guys need to think about rehoming yourselves, because these guys are just looking out for themselves and how to make, are not looking out for the Alliance. They're just trying to figure out how to make money off of the transition. And so our diplomat team spoke with them and asked them what they wanted to do with all the CEOs. And it felt like maybe we should rehome some of these guys. Maybe we should form a new alliance with a fresh start, with new leadership, with people who are willing to do things with a totally different structure. And LI3 sort of came to us and were like, yeah, we're not really happy with the way things are going for us. We kind of want to have a fresh start. And so it ended up turning into those guys making a thing. And, what stuff is going where and who's going where and all that stuff is still a little up in the air. But the idea is that the new alliance that's going to be formed structurally, with like organizations and stuff, are going to somewhat resemble the way Goonswarm is structured. And we're going to give them any advice and coach them on how they want to do it. But we'll have directors running the infrastructure for them while they figure out the leadership stuff and the PvP direction. So it'll take a lot of the burden off, because trying to get a new alliance started while you have to run half of a region full of towers, jump bridges, jump freighter services, all of that crap is a huge pain in the ass. And if you take away that burden and let them focus on their military structure, what kind of goals and stuff that they want to have as an alliance, makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, I bet it's quite a load off.
Yeah. Like, if you imagine you were starting a new alliance and you had an idea of like what you wanted to, where you wanted to take it, but you didn't want to do all of the busy work crap that goes along with alliance, and there's a lot of busy work. And so we're going to help them do whatever those guys end up wanting to do, and make sure they have somewhere to live, people to fight, fun things to do. Because a lot of them, the consensus that we were getting from each CEO is, we'd like to stay in the CFC, but we don't really like these alliance options. We don't get along with these guys. We don't want to go over here, whatever. They know that they want to be in the CFC. They know they like playing with the people they've been playing with. They just didn't like the leadership situation and what the options that they saw they weren't interested in. It's weird,
So like,
you
how
play
many,
with people for 2 years, you're looking for a different dynamic.
How many of these corps are actually going over, versus how many are leaving CFC, versus how many are going to other CFC alliances and not this new entity?
I think about a third to half are going to the new alliance. About half are getting rehomed, and there might be one or two corps out of both of these alliances that just leave or go to LoSec or just hang the fuck out.
That'll be an interesting thing to see, and maybe we'll follow up on that as they figure out their new identity and where they're going, because I think that story is interesting. I like hearing about alliances getting fresh starts.
There's definitely a lot of potential there, and if the right people step up, that just a big thing with gents was trying to get somebody to step up that was a good leader. Like, there were a bunch of guys that were good leaders. They just didn't have the time or didn't want to do it. And
Xander Fiend, a dictator for life. Now's your chance, buddy. Go, go, go.
That would be an interesting thing.
We support your coup. Gnar gets hired as a private military.
just repeatedly grief everybody who speaks out against him.
Exactly, exactly. We'll get special hats, Xander. It'll be
his
great.
Own Sardaukar.
The ponies and zebras working together. It'll be beautiful.
Oh my god. Wow.
Are you hearing me, man?
I totally missed that. You definitely need to try and recruit his corp now.
Are you kidding me? I'd love Zebra Corp, but they're so happy with the CFC. There's no pulling them away.
The propaganda would be amazing now that I think about it.
Yeah, well, hey, convince them.
Because then you could change the Noir Corp logo to a pony, and they would have a zebra, and then you would need those ship corp logos, right? Because then you'd have Pony Zebra Fleet always attacking people.
We'd have to cancel the Tuesday zebra hangings, but, you know. Oh. I'm sure if they were... If they were to be, you know, come into our home and that sort of thing, we could work around that, I'm sure. Have to tear down the racist barn, all that kind of stuff.
Oh my gosh.
Hey folks, thanks for listening. It's a long episode, so we're going to split it up into two. This is going to be our first intermission. Make sure to listen to our next release, which is going to be the second half of this episode 74.